Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Tuesday, September 2nd, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Dillon Fire update, roadless rule rescission and what it means for public lands, Redway Water, water conservation stage 2 in effect and service disruption September 3rd. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
An update on the Dillon Fire in Klamath County. It is currently 8,372 acres and at 7% containment. A red flag warning has been issued for Siskiyou County, meaning that there is a high possibility for fire activity in the area. Extreme fire activity is predicted for today due to hot, dry, and unstable weather, with the possibility of dry lightning forecast for this afternoon. KMUD News spoke with Jason Engel, Public Information Officer for the Dillon Fire, for an update.
The fire today, we're expecting it to be a hot and dry day, temperatures up to near 100 degrees, and we'll see a gust up to 30 miles per hour, and the conditions are in place where we'll see, like you're going to see, some pretty good significant fire activity. And so we're looking at this fire, probably going to see more active today than we've seen the last couple of days. We believe that the areas that we have been doing structure protection on are looking good. The areas to the east of Klamath River have a lot of work's gone into those areas. That's actually the 7% containment is in that area where the structures are located over to east of the Klamath River. And so that exterior part looks good, but there's areas to the north, there's where the fire had jumped across the river and on to the northeast of the fire, and then to on the northwest portion of the fire, where we're likely to see more activity. The fire is starting to grow in those directions. The fire on the southern end is still very active. It's back down into a drainage, but as of right now, it hasn't crossed, and so that's good news. And we're really hoping that we have a lot of crews in there on the southern end of the fire to really work to try to secure that southern end and to hopefully hold that end. We'll see how it goes today, where this fire activity is going to be hot, really getting good going this afternoon. But there's been a lot of work the last couple of days trying to get that southern end secured along that drainage. So, wish for the best. We're working hard, to get this, to do that with the crews, to try to get the mainly focus is, life and property. And so they're focusing their efforts on where there's structures and homes and doing things in a safe way where our firefighters aren't putting themselves in danger either. So that's been the key focus here. And so there's been, so far, what we've seen is the areas with the structures have had, we've had good success there.
Fire resources continue to arrive daily, and due to this, there will be increased traffic on Highway 96. There is currently limited one-way traffic control on Highway 96 at various locations from the 10.7-mile marker west to 2.2 miles west of Cottage Grove due to fire operations. Drive with caution as debris is rolling into the roadway and visibility remains low during early morning hours. Highway 96 is closed from 3.2 miles west to 5.3 miles east of Syed Valley, Siskiyou County, due to wildfire activity. There are currently evacuation warnings and orders in place. Up-to-date evacuation information is available at protect.genesys.com. That's protect.genasys.com. For updates on the Dillon Fire, you can email 2025.dillon@firenet.gov or visit the Siskiyou County Office of Emergency Services Facebook page, facebook.com/SiskiyouCountyOES. KMUD News will continue to bring updates on fires during this 2025 fire season. On June 23rd, Secretary of Agriculture Brooke Rollins announced that the USDA would be rescinding the Roadless Rule. The Roadless Rule Act was passed in 2001 and is a conservation policy that limits road construction and the resulting environmental impact on designated areas of public land. Not only does this restrict road construction, but the act also prohibits reconstruction and timber harvest on nearly 59 million acres of national forest land. KMUD News spoke with Josefina Barantes, a Del Norte advocate and 30 by 30 coordinator for the Environmental Protection Information Center, EPIC, for more information on what the roadless rule is and what this rescission means for public lands.
The roadless rule was adopted back in 2001 with bipartisan support, and it protects 58.5 million acres of roadless national forest land in 39 states from new construction and prohibits the logging of these roadless areas within the national forest system. Roadless areas in our national forest provide essential habitat and connectivity for over 2,100 threatened, endangered, or even sensitive animal and plant species. Roadless areas are unparalleled in biodiversity and sustain essential ecosystems for wildlife. Additionally, more than 60 million Americans get their clean drinking water from our national forests, and roadless areas contain all or portions of 354 municipal watersheds, including Humboldt counties. Repealing the roadless rule is bad climate science. Mature and old growth trees are natural carbon sinks that store carbon dioxide and provide shade for cooler temperatures. Essentially, these forests fight climate change by simply existing, and roadless areas include huge amounts of our remaining mature and old growth trees. You also asked, you know, how did we get here? So back in, I want to say, June, the Secretary of Agriculture, Rollins, announced that the USDA had plans to rescind the 2001 roadless rule, right? And they submitted a notice of intent to do this on Friday to, this basically opens up a public comment period for two proposed options: to either rescind the roadless rule or to take no action and not do so. You can make comment and submit them to the Federal Register. You can go to the Environmental Protection Information Center's website, which is wildcalifornia.org, and find information on how to submit comments to the Federal Register on the proposed rescission of the roadless rule. We also have draft comments there, so you don't have to come up with something yourself.
Public comment for the proposal to develop an environmental impact statement opened on Friday, August 29th, and will close on September 19th, 2025. While this rescission is still a proposal, public comment is also a time to vocalize why the roadless rule shouldn't be rescinded at all. The proposal promotes the idea of common sense management of public forests, blaming forests being, quote, dangerously overstocked and increasingly threatened by drought, mortality, insect-borne disease, and wildfire, end quote, according to the press release from the USDA website. The proposal seeks to open up nearly 45 million acres of nearly 60 million acres of roadless areas within the national forest system to logging and road construction. Barrantes explains the kinds of ecological effects this would have on public lands and waters.
What that would entail is more logging. So the roadless rule protects these national forests from new roads and logging, basically, and that sort of industrial development. We're trying to argue that this is a wildfire safety issue, and that we need more roads and that we need less trees in order to prevent wildfires from breaking out, when the science points to roads and more clear cuts being leading to forests being more at risk for wildfire, in fact. I think that folks don't fully understand perhaps how important these roadless areas are and how real these roadless areas are. They aren't just, you know, places where elusive wildlife live and exist, and how important it is to the ecosystem services that we survive off of. You know, Humboldt County is home to significant portions of the Six Rivers National Forest, which contains over 150,000 acres of these inventoried roadless areas that we're seeking to protect. These include wild and ecologically vital places such as the Mad River Buttes, Pilot Creek, Grouse Mountain, Blue Creek, and the headwaters of the South Fork Trinity River. And the roadless rule has provided essential protections for these areas by prohibiting most road building and commercial logging in the designated roadless areas. These landscapes support old growth forests, rare plant communities, and essential wildlife corridors for species such as the northern spotted owl, the Pacific fisher, and marble murrelet, really protecting our local watersheds as well. The roadless rule's restriction on development minimized habitat fragmentation and preserved intact watersheds that supply drinking water and salmon and steelhead recovery, especially in the Trinity, the Mad, the Van Dusen River basins. Most notably, the Mad River Buttes and Pilot Creek form part of the headwaters for the Mad River, also known as Butuat, which provides the drinking water for the 88,000 Humboldt County residents. These roadless areas really help protect against erosion, sedimentation, and degraded water quality for us Humboldt County residents. So I think folks just don't understand perhaps the very real impacts this could have to their very lives.
More opportunities for comment will become available as the rulemaking process progresses. For more information about the roadless rule rescission and how to make public comment, the website is wildcalifornia.org. Today, Redwood Community Services District announced that Water Conservation Stage 2 is in effect for Redway. Redway was previously in Water Conservation Stage 1, but as the water has dropped in the South Fork of the Eel River by 50%, it triggered Stage 2. KMUD News spoke with Cody Cox, General Manager for Redway Community Services District, for more information.
It's when current river flows are below 50% of median flows as measured by the USGS Miranda gauge. So that's under Summer Conservation Declaration, that's 6.1 in our Water Conservation Ordinance 2018-1. So on the 1st, which was yesterday, the South Fork of the Eel River dropped below 20 CFS. Now that triggered Stage 2 conservation. And again, we take these measurements at the Miranda gauge. So that's what triggered this. And the other thing that can trigger stage two is when the river gets low, our equipment at the surface water treatment plant could run too long. So if it runs beyond 15 to 18 hours, then we go into stage two and ask people to conserve because our equipment is running too long. So just to kind of reiterate, we were in summer conservation stage one because our median flow dropped to at or 50% below, okay, at the USGS Miranda gauge. And as of the 1st, we are at stage two, which was caused by trigger number 4 listed in our water conservation ordinance as river flows fall below 20 CFS at Miranda gauge. So that's where we're at.
Under this declaration, restrictions include landscape watering only allowed between the hours of 6 p.m. and 10 p.m., outdoor water usage restricted to an odd-even plan, equipping any hoses with a quick-acting shutoff nozzle, refraining from hosing or washing sidewalks, walkways, or other hard-surfaced areas, as well as many more listed and detailed in the declaration, which is accessible on their website. Redway residents should also be aware that tomorrow, September 3rd, there will be water service interruptions starting at 9 a.m. for approximately 45 minutes or less. This is due to Redway Community Services District draining and replacing a water tank. Cox explains what residents can expect.
So tomorrow on the 3rd at 9 a.m., we will be disrupting service to the entire town. We're going to be putting in a 10-inch valve up there at our storage facility site up off of Rusk, which is the point of our distribution system for storage. So there's no other way but to disrupt storage to get this larger diameter 10-inch valve in. We only plan on being down hopefully no longer than 20 minutes, but it could take up to 45 minutes. But everybody needs to be made aware of this. They can expect pressure drop. Pressure is going to start dropping around 9 a.m. and then there could be full service interruption and no water for up to possibly 45 minutes. But we've prepared and we only plan on having it out a minimal amount of time.
For more information, the website is redwaycsd.org. In state news, State Senate passes bill looking for California purchase of oil threatening Amazon rainforests and communities, KPFA's Christina Onnestead reports.
Advocates say Senate Resolution 51 is intended to safeguard the Amazon rainforest, which has been called the lungs of the world. It's one of the most biodiverse places on Earth, home to 40,000 plant species, 3,000 species of fish, and 1,300 bird species. It's also one of the last refuges for jaguars, harpy eagles, and pink river dolphins. But it faces threats from large-scale oil production. California State Senator Josh Becker of San Mateo County wants the state to investigate the role it plays in procuring oil from the Amazon and to stop it.
Protecting the Amazon is not just good for the communities that live there, but our climate here in California. California is dependent on the Amazon for temperature and rainfall regulation. In other words, our fates are linked.
Large-scale oil production in the Amazon has led to spills, polluting the land and endangering the health of indigenous tribes, increasing cancer, respiratory ailments, miscarriages, and other health problems.
And I'm going to share a shocking stat. 50% of the oil exported from the Amazon ends up in California refineries.
Environmentalists say the oil imports then drive deforestation and rights violations. Becker's Senate Resolution 51 would probe California's role in procuring oil from the Amazon and commit the Senate to consider alternatives, including ways to protect the Amazon instead. It passed unanimously, 37-0. A 2021 report by Amazon Watch says California is the world's largest importer of oil from the Amazon, purchasing as much as 89% of the crude oil produced from Ecuador, one of nine countries the vast tropical rainforest covers. The state resolution follows appeals from indigenous leaders demanding justice for their impacted communities, from companies like Chevron and its subsidiaries that have polluted the Amazon for decades with oil spills that remain unabated and flares in surrounding communities to this day. The move for California to distance itself from importing oil from the Amazon even garnered support from Republicans who have long supported the oil industry in the state. Senator Shannon Grove of Bakersfield calls the Amazon rainforest vital, but also warns California is not prepared to transition away from fossil fuels at the pace some are pushing.
The Amazon is the world's lung. Bulldozing down the rainforest is not something that we should be doing. Californians consume 1.8 million barrels of oil every single day. We are in a mid-transition, like my colleague said. We are not transitioning off oil and fossil fuels used products fast enough, and the cost is going to hit us all really, really hard if we don't pay attention.
According to the California Energy Commission, California imports about 14% of its oil from Ecuador. It's about 43.7 million barrels a year. And while the state is a top oil producer, California only produces about a third of the 1.4 million barrels its residents consume each day. Supporters of SR 51 say the state doesn't need crude oil from the Amazon to make up the difference. Senator Henry Stern is a Democrat from Los Angeles.
What we do in the near term in terms of domestic production, I think, is going to be important, but the most important step we can take is to actually reduce our addiction to petroleum. And we can do that still on a 2035 pathway, and I think that's the greatest hope we can give the people of the Amazon and all over this world, is help people get out of traffic, get out of their cars, and stop using your family budget to go pollute someone else's backyard as well as your own.
The Amazon is a vast backyard. It contains 1.4 billion acres of dense forests, half the planet's remaining tropical forests, and it's still a playground for scientists. They've identified more than 2,000 new species of plants and vertebrae, including a monkey that purrs like a cat, since 1999. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio, KPFA.
California lawmakers to vote on bill to make car buying more transparent, Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
You know how some car dealerships tell people one price to get them in the door, then jack it up with a bunch of add-ons? That will become illegal under a bill being considered in California. The Combating Auto Retail Scams, or CARS Act, is expected to get a vote in the state assembly this week. Rosemary Shahan with the nonprofit Consumers for Auto Safety and Reliability says the change would save California car buyers millions.
It will require car dealers to disclose the total price up front. It's a flat-out prohibition against charging more than what they advertise as the total price.
Initial opposition came from the car dealers, auto lenders, the Chamber of Commerce, and the Civil Justice Association, but they negotiated amendments and dropped their objections. Under President Biden, the Federal Trade Commission issued a similar rule nationwide, but it was struck down in court, and the Trump administration has not indicated plans to revive it. The California version would also prohibit car dealers from selling add-ons that don't benefit the consumer, for instance, lifetime oil changes for an electric vehicle. Shahan says California would also become the first state in the country to require a cooling-off period for used car sales.
3-day cooling-off period for used cars. So if you buy a car that costs $50,000 or less, you would be able to bring it back and get a refund, and you could bring it back for any reason at all.
Dealers would be allowed to charge a restocking fee of between $200 and $600, depending on the sales price of the car. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, UN Security Council members, except U.S., signed statement recognizing man-made famine in Gaza, KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
The United Nations Security Council held a nearly four-hour meeting on Israel's campaign in Gaza, where council members largely discussed the famine and killings of humanitarian aid workers and journalists, while Israel's ambassador blasted Hamas and the United Nations. Among the speakers at the meeting was the UN Deputy Emergency Relief Coordinator, Joyce Msuya.
This famine is not a product of drought or some form of natural disaster. It is a created catastrophe, the result of a conflict that has caused massive civilian death, injury, destruction, and forced displacement.
A released Israeli hostage, Ilana Gritsevsky, also addressed the council, urging it not to turn away or let political divisions silence the voices of victims.
Use your influence, your power, your responsibility to demand the unconditional release of every hostage. No tomorrow, not in some distant future, but now. We need to make a deal. People in Israel want this war to end.
Palestinian Ambassador Riyad Mansour urged the diplomats to go to Tel Aviv and hear people saying, stop the war so hostages can be released.
All the hostages that were released, including this lady with us, Ms. Gritsky, was released because of a ceasefire. Ceasefire saved lives, release hostages, continuation of the war takes lives and kill our children and women and many others, including Israelis.
Israeli Ambassador Danny Danon disputed reports of famine and the killings of civilians. He also blasted what he called empty UN statements and meaningless summits.
At least be honest about what your statements really mean. Empowering Hamas and allowing them to continue to exploit the people of Gaza and threaten the people of Israel, that's what it means if they will stay there. And I tell you today, we will never allow that to happen.
The Security Council did not take action at the meeting, but 14 of the 15 permanent Security Council members, all but the United States, signed on to a statement recognizing a famine in Gaza and calling it a man-made crisis. The statement also warns that using starvation as a weapon of war is banned under international law. So those diplomats join a host of other leaders that have called for an end to the war and release of hostages. Another such leader, Pope Leo XIV, called Wednesday for an end to this spiral of violence, to end the war, and to give priority to the common good of people. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
In national Native news, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Studies show microplastics can be found throughout our ecosystem, and plastic pollution disproportionately impacts indigenous communities. So scientists at Alaska Pacific University in Anchorage are studying how these tiny particles of plastic move through Alaska water. And they're developing the first in-state lab accredited to test water samples for microplastics. Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports.
Nike McCampbell pulls on her diving dry suit and walks to the edge of the water at Smitty's Cove in Whittier. She dives below the surface. McCampbell will travel underwater about 80 yards from shore to collect water samples. She says they're studying how microplastics are transported through ocean currents.
And we're going to see where microplastics are moving.
She's part of a new team at Alaska Pacific University. Last year, the APU team got a $5 million grant from NASA to study microplastics in Alaska. Microplastics have already been found in the most remote corners of the state. So APU's research aims to expand that understanding by looking at how microplastics enter all water sources, including oceans and rain. Kian Muldoon is a graduate student on the research team. He says the ultimate goal of their work is to help reduce the harmful health effects of microplastics.
Hopefully using that research to inform cleanup efforts or to try to mitigate harm.
Back at the APU lab, Muldoon and his colleagues can use new specialized equipment to help identify various microplastics in the samples. The team has already collected samples from the summit of Denali, the Aklutna Lake watershed, and Prince William Sound. That's according to Dr. Dee Barker, a chemist and head of the research team. She says with new instruments funded by the grant, the team can identify particles small enough to likely pass through human tissues, and they can study the chemistry behind the microplastics they find.
The chemistry of that particle, how does that interact with the chemistry of a human being?
She says that understanding is missing from much of existing microplastics research. Ultimately, Barker says they aim to get their lab accredited for microplastics testing. That would allow Alaska communities to send in water samples to test for microplastics. Barker says testing water sources is the first step in understanding how communities could protect themselves from the tiny plastic particles. In Whittier, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Native Americans are more likely to develop Alzheimer's disease or other dementias than white or Asian Americans. And because tribal members are already at risk of being murdered or going missing, it means having culturally sensitive resources when elders stray from home, as KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports.
Megan Dickin is from the United Houma Nation in Louisiana and with the nonprofit International Association for Indigenous Aging. She recently presented a new toolkit which aims to help when Native elders wander.
It's very customizable, and so every community can utilize it in a way that suits them, and we encourage that.
Dickin says tribal police departments are often the first responders.
But a lot of times law enforcement is stretched thin. They don't have enough officers, or they don't have enough resources, or they have other crimes happening. So it can aid in community policing.
Her group says 80% of people with dementia will wander from home multiple times, while 90% may die if they are not found within 24 hours.
When they pass on, a lot of times that knowledge disappears. And we certainly don't want that to die with them prematurely because they went wandering and were not found in time.
For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Katie Phillips, and thanks to our reporters, Christina Onnested, Suzanne Potter, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Nat Cardos.